Hello and welcome to the Metzlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Metzlis and author of Central Asia in Focus newsletter. China's involvement and influence in Central Asia has been the topic of many reports and academic works. It's a complex issue, and most reports naturally tend to focus on one specific area of China's relationship with the five Central Asian states. The Central Asia Barometer Organization recently released a survey based on years of polling to gauge how people in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan feel about Chinese economic, political, and social influence in their countries. Surveys were not possible in Tajikistan, but we're fortunate to have a guest who has done extensive fieldwork on China's presence in Tajikistan. So, without further ado, joining us on the Metzlis Podcast today are two of the authors of the Central Asia Barometer Report, Kasiyat Ismanova, Director of Central Asia Barometer and Survey Research Practitioner based in Bishkek, Frank Marchioni, a postdoctoral research associate at the School of Political and International Relations, University of Kent, working on xenophobia in the Global South. Frank just got his PhD from the University of Sheffield with a thesis on Uzbekistan's agency in normative relations with China. And we also have Irina Hoffman, a rural sociologist specializing in social and agrarian change in Central Asia. Irina is a research associate at the University of Oxford and has studied the Chinese presence in rural Tajikistan ethnographically since the mid-2010s and has written extensively on China-Tajikistan interactions, including in academic work and public-facing outlets such as People's Map of Global China. So thank you all for being on the program. And Kasiyat, I want to start with you. If we can just, for the benefit of our audience, could you just kind of run down some of the methodology you used for this survey that was just released?
Okay, sure. Thanks for the invitation once more. The Central Asia Barometer Survey is a biennial survey that started in 2017, and we conducted it actually in all five Central Asian countries, including Tajikistan. But in Tajikistan, we had a very limited questionnaire, and for the comparability reasons, the question wordings are different. That's why we didn't include it in the report. But we actually cover all five countries within Central Asia Barometer Survey. It relied on probability-based sampling, which is a rare thing right now in the polling world, especially in the light of the U.S. elections and how a lot of polls got wrong with the results. But our Central Asia Barometer Survey is a probability-based survey. Until 2020, we conducted it using stratified random sampling via face-to-face method. After 2020, we had to make the switch in order to continue doing the survey amidst the pandemic. We switched to telephone, but we also continued to do it using a probability-based sampling. We used a random digit dialing using a telephone polling. So our interviewers would call the respondents using a telephone within a call center. CAP also adheres to the standards of the Transparency Initiative, even though we are not part of it. We fully disclose all the methods that we use in our surveys, and the full methods reports can also be found on CAP's website, including the questionnaires and the data sets in different formats. We also recently launched a new online data analysis tool, which is a dashboard which saves a lot of time and makes the survey data more accessible to different audiences without any data analysis skills. And all Central Asia Barometer survey data that was collected from 2017 till 2023 in all five Central Asian countries is accessible on our website, and it's actually widely used by academics. But we would be happy to see more journalists and students, government officials using the data too. So I think this wraps up the methodology.
Excellent summary. Thank you very much. Okay, well then let's get into it a little bit here, and let's start with economic and trade and how China is viewed in the Central Asian countries. Frank, you participated in the survey. Tell us a little bit about the view of China's economic power in Central Asia. And I know it changes from country to country, but could you start by telling me a little bit about that?
Of course. So, well, first of all, just to add to what Kasiyat has already said, the way we approached the Central Asia Barometer Survey was we selected the questions that were specifically connected to China. And there were a few of them. Some of them were introduced in like already in 2017, others a bit later. And so focusing on the economic side, three of our variables were related to kind of economic or para-economic issues. And these three questions asked Central Asian respondents whether they supported new Chinese investment in infrastructure or energy, whether they supported the kind of movement of Chinese workers and labor to work in these projects, and whether they supported the use of Chinese technology for the economic development of the country. So I guess overall, we saw kind of some discrepancies in Central Asian public opinion. So I guess the first thing that the first like finding is that different countries had different opinions on China's economic role in Central Asia. So I guess Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan had more similar trends over the year. And so starting from Chinese projects, while in the past there was, in the early years of the Central Asia Barometer Survey, these two countries had quite balanced opinions about new Chinese projects, about whether they supported new Chinese projects in the countries. This has changed over the years, and positive views on Chinese investment have grown to become quite, I guess, like a large majority. So a large majority of respondents in these two countries support new investments. This was not really the case in Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan. This is because in both countries, the support for new Chinese projects was quite high already in the first waves. However, there are other aspects that where Central Asians have been, I guess, more critical, and specifically the kind of very common discussion on the migration of Chinese workers to Central Asia to work either temporarily or permanently in Chinese companies, which is one of the core aspects of global criticism on China's role in the global South and global East. But again, here we see a slight improvement in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan over the opinion on Chinese workers moving to Central Asia. However, views remain quite negative. While in Uzbekistan, we see a decline in support for the movement of Chinese workers in Central Asia. Now, this finding for Uzbekistan matches very well with the overall trend of public opinion on Central Asia in Uzbekistan, which has been declining, particularly in the last couple of waves. However, in terms of support for technology, we saw a general support from the population. So again, we witnessed a growth in positive opinions in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, and generally positive views on the use of Chinese technology in Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan. Now, just to kind of complete the overview, since 2019, other questions were asked in only in Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan, and some of them in Turkmenistan as well. And these measured whether people were concerned about a number of aspects of China's economic involvement, including debt, land, quality of goods, and other questions asked what the expectations were of Central Asians in relation to developing relations with China. Specifically, they asked whether Central Asians thought that more like a stronger involvement of China in their economies would bring better infrastructures and more job opportunities. And I guess a couple of snapshots of this, because I've been speaking already for a while. I guess a core concern for Central Asians has been over the years land. So the question asked whether respondents were concerned about Central Asian actors, economic actors acquiring land in Central Asia. And this has been a very, and And the finding is that in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, respondents have been overwhelmingly concerned about this aspect, unsurprisingly. However, what is interesting again is that in Uzbekistan, this wasn't always the case, but concerns have been growing over time. In terms of expectations, we see again the same trends in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, where both expectations on Chinese-led development, bringing improving infrastructures and bringing more jobs have increased over the years, while in Uzbekistan we see a slight decrease. If you have other questions, I can answer them directly.
I have many and we're going to get to them, but I want to give Irina a chance here to talk a little bit about Chinese presence in Tajikistan, economic presence. In some ways, Tajikistan compares more favorably to Kyrgyzstan. You know, China really is the only country that's willing to invest in some of these projects. I'm thinking, for instance, the thermal power plant in Dushanbe. No one else would build this, really, except for China. So what do the Tajiks think? What do people in Tajikistan think about Chinese influence, economic influence in their country?
Thank you very much, Bruce. And also, well, thank you very much for the invitation. I think, well, first of all, it's of course difficult to generalize, but I am over the years, I've seen, well, so to say, diversification of perceptions and responses. And of course, this also is related to, well, growing diversification of Chinese projects and Chinese actors. And as a result, more in-person encounters and interactions, so to say, and also the fact that, well, local actors become increasingly involved in these in Chinese projects, right? So whether it's Chinese state-owned enterprises or Chinese, well, projects by smaller private enterprises, for instance. So I need to think a bit here. So,
in terms of infrastructure projects, how do people in Tajikistan view that? You know, again, some of these infrastructure roads, for instance, things that really no one wants to invest in. So do Tajiks tend to look favorably upon this, or do they think maybe they should be able to do it themselves or find somebody else to do it with them?
Regarding infrastructure, I do think on the one hand, people really appreciate and those projects in infrastructure are highly welcome, of course, are very welcome. So in that regard, those projects are welcome, and in that regard, there's a positive attitude towards Chinese projects. But here I have to address that the projects undertaken by Chinese enterprises are not always financed by the Chinese state, right? For instance, about the road construction from Dushanbe towards the south to Kurgan and towards the Afghan border, so in Khatlom, it was financed by the ADB. And that's not always known by the population, right? By the people working in these projects. What I do see, for instance, agriculture, but also in the mines, is that on the one hand, of course, the Chinese companies, they provide employment, and they the salaries that are offered are higher than when people work for a local company. So that's generally, positive development. There is this, it's very hard to generalize here. But on the whole, I think it is important to address, and I think this also really comes to the fore in the report by the Central Asia Barometer, that there is perceptions are more positive, I think, than what popular media often assumes. I think that's important to address.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. One thing before we move on to the political aspect of this, I'm really curious about the presence of Chinese workers, right? And especially personally, this has been very interesting to me because I was there in Central Asia during the 1990s. Almost every year I was in Central Asia during the 1990s, there were no Chinese at all. Right? And for years when I would talk with the people in Central Asia about China, you know, there was a sense of respect, but at the same time, there was kind of a feeling of menace. That they had this big country next to them. They'd been told by Soviet propaganda, of course, for the last few decades of the Soviet Union that China was not their friend. They had a fortified border, you know, with China and all that stuff. But, and now all of a sudden, here's these people that I remember the first time I saw Chinese workers. Now all of a sudden, here they are. They've never been there before. People have been talking about them and spreading rumors about them and stuff. And now they're on the ground there. Irina, I'll actually start with you on this because in Tajikistan's case, it's kind of unique. Chinese are actually able to farm, work farms in Tajikistan. They've married local women. And of course, I know that there's been problems when they with road workers where there's been fights and stuff. But I mean, all of a sudden they're there, and it's true in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, and we'll get to that in a second too. But I mean, they're there and they never were before. But this is like, I suppose maybe the biggest influx of an outside group since independence. So what do people think about having actually Chinese there in Tajikistan, and they can see them, or do they see them? Do they mix with them? How does that work?
Well, that's a very interesting and good question. I think it's very important to address here that the pandemic has had a big influence on the so-called import, right? We could say today there are much less Chinese laborers on the ground, but also the cost of labor, local labor is way cheaper than buying in Chinese laborers. So for the big projects, also in agriculture, in construction, you see most of the labor actually is local. And so that's very important to address. I see it in agriculture where, you have the foreman, you have the managers, for instance, who are Chinese. But then below, it's, for instance, the manager of the production unit. So, and then it's a large group of laborers. So that really changed in recent years. But of course, overall, you see Chinese companies still have their Chinese labor, and it's really segregated, right? Where people, for instance, have their lunch, where people stay. So in that regard, there's not a lot of mingling. In Dushanbe, that's different, though, I'd say. And what I've seen over the years is that, for instance, Chinese restaurants have also become very popular among Tajiks. So there's more mingling now. I think the segregation is still there. It was more pronounced in earlier years, but it's somewhat less today. But I think so. This is very important. The idea that Chinese companies really bring in all their laborers, but it's definitely not the case any longer. I mean, I'm speaking about Tajikistan here.
Okay, thank you, Kasiyat. Actually, the first place I ever saw Chinese nationals was in Kyrgyzstan, and it was in Karasu at the bazaar. And I spoke with some of the local Kyrgyz merchants about that. Obviously, they weren't happy with the fact that the Chinese had been able to rent stalls and were selling their own goods there at the same time. And since then, I've run into Chinese working road workers, all kinds of things. How is the view in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan? You know, to see that there's Chinese citizens working inside Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. Or in any of the countries, actually, Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan too.
Yes, Bruce. So from the report and the analysis that Frank and Jessica and other team members worked on, CAP was mainly interested in getting experienced sinologists like Frank and Jessica and get them work with our survey data so that they can get these insights and also help some young aspiring sinologists to get more experience. And I think it was successful. And also from the report, and from the analysis, we had an event in Almaty where we discussed the findings. We concluded with an understanding that there is no much xenophobia in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, but more of a xenophilia in the recent years. And I think that Frank can also comment on this. In general, when we in surveys, when you ask about general perception of certain phenomena or like a country, which is a very neutral thing, usually people tend to be positive about countries. Like when we ask about any country, Mexico or Argentina, countries that which have very little connection to the region, people would still be very positive. And usually it's generally we assume that people would be positive. But when we ask very specific questions, for example, about Chinese workers coming to work to the country or this issue of the land grab. So there is in the literature and also in the discussions around China and xenophobia, there is this huge phobia about land grabs, right? And we also talked about it in the report. When we ask about the specific issues, like related to land or the workers or just Chinese vaccine, we also asked during several ways, we asked about the human rights in the Xinjiang. So when we ask these specific questions, we can uncover more of actual attitudes of people than when we ask general questions.
Briefly, Irina, did you want to add something before I go to Frank here?
Yes, thank you. I just briefly wanted to add, Bruce, you referred to the relatively unique presence, right, of Chinese actors. And I think this is interesting to mention indeed that when you look at, for instance, the rural areas, presence of, you have a lot of international organizations, donors, and active in various parts of Tajikistan. But for instance, in the southwest, rural areas, you hardly have those. So when you think about, well, the lived experience, for instance, lived experience of geopolitics, this particularly comes to the fore in interactions between Chinese actors and local actors. Say, these people normally don't really mingle with internationals like what happens in urban areas. And another note regarding the number of Chinese workers. So the Tajik law or the Tajik state has quota regulations about immigration. So from various countries, and there's an implicit expectation actually that companies within 5 years have 80% local laborers and 20% like foreign laborers. Of course, all companies may be able to negotiate this ratio. So there is pressure on foreign companies, including Chinese, to increasingly hire local laborers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Thank you. It's important to add that. Frank, your impressions that you got from the attitudes of Central Asian people toward Chinese workers being on their territory and making money in Central Asia.
Well, I think what Irina and Kaziet already kind of introduced is fundamental, but I will start from specifically what Kaziet mentioned, which is how like specific questions really kind of underline the actual attitude and changes in attitude of people towards China, in the sense that, or better, the complexity of the attitude of people towards China. Because when we say China, we tend to imagine the Chinese government, but the reality is that even a centralized kind of system, political system like China, is made up of many actors, and these many actors act in different ways and have different relationships with local actors that they engage with in Central Asia. So when we think of Chinese workers moving to Central Asia, I guess in the past we often would see, as was already mentioned before, groups of kind of coherent demographics and kind of coherent professional roles coming to Central Asia for specific reasons, which could be, you know, building a specific infrastructure or supporting the first phases of some project. I guess, you know, we really have to differentiate between what is the permanent role and the permanent activity of Chinese companies in Central Asia, as opposed to temporary projects, for example, those that Irina was mentioning before that are also funded through international financial institutions like the Asian Development Bank, but also World Bank, etc. These different projects and different activities offer different employment opportunities. And the more China is moving towards kind of diversifying its activity in Central Asia, starting from agricultural activities, but also in manufacturing more and more recently, for example, in Uzbekistan with the development of the electric vehicles production in Jizak that I visited last month. And so the more these kind of projects become common, the more the discussion about workers and about investment changes, right? So it is, as Irina was saying, it is less the case in these longer term projects that there is like a majority or a high number of Chinese workers that work in factories or fields in Central Asia. The majority tend to be local people, while managers and specialized workers tend to be Chinese. You know, my expertise is on Uzbekistan. And there, I guess, it is very interesting to see that public opinion is becoming warier of Chinese people moving to Central Asia for economic reasons over the years. I think a lot has to do with the fact that in the past there were less of these like kind of longer term projects. So probably the fact that there are a lot of companies all over the country, and specifically in the regions in Gizakh and Serdaria, where a lot of Chinese managers are kind of, you know, living more more permanently, have again created also the new opportunities for engagement between the local population and Chinese migrants, and therefore potentially even some new conflict or xenophobia. But like in Tajikistan, it not only the like hiring foreign workers is, you know, like you need some registration. There are like a lot of procedures to do that, but it used to be very expensive as well. So there were fees that companies had to pay. Now this is changing, of course, together with the countries, with Uzbekistan's liberalization policy. This is becoming all digitalized. The price is lower. However, this has not really resulted in the employment of mass numbers, like of masses of Chinese workers. And even in terms of managers and specialized workers, what I witnessed was that there is a lot of training and a lot of kind of transfer of kind of specialized knowledge to local researchers in those new projects. So I guess, you know, that it's difficult to give like a unique picture of what Central Asian approach is towards Chinese workers, because Chinese workers are different type of workers and work in very different projects and different conditions.
Okay, great. Thank you. Kasia, you wanted to say something?
Yes, and I also wanted to add a very interesting observation from the Uzbekistan data that is also featured in the report, how in, for example, there was a 73% of support in fall 2019, and then it fall to 53% by spring 2020. And I think there is a huge influence of the pandemic and also the media coverage of the pandemic about the Chinese source of the virus. If you remember, there was a lot of speculations in the media about the Chinese source, Han, etc. So what I want to say is that public opinion fluctuates a lot, and we conduct this survey only twice a year. And our dream is conduct this survey every week, because thus we will be able to actually measure public opinion trends more accurately. But when we do the survey twice a year, it's very hard to capture the actual trend, but we are rather capturing different public opinion at some certain points in public opinion, if I can explain this. And the media and major events, the media coverage of different events have a lot of influence on the public opinion. And also regarding the Chinese workers, also I think public opinion data also needs to be complemented by qualitative research. And Frank has done a lot of it in Uzbekistan. As I know, talking to people who live around the Chinese factories, different infrastructure projects, which have actual direct experience, lived experience with Chinese workers. And I think their opinion can be absolutely different from the general population's opinion. And CUP survey is a general population survey.
We're talking about Central Asian public opinion toward China, and my guests are Frank Marchioni, postdoctoral research associate at the School of Politics and International Relations at the University of Kent, working on xenophobia in the Global South; Irna Hoffman, a rural sociologist specializing in social and agrarian change in Central Asia. Irna is a research associate at the University of Oxford and has studied the Chinese presence in rural Tajikistan ethnographically for a decade now; and Kasiat Ismanova, Director of Central Asia Barometer and Survey Research Practitioner based in Bishkek. Okay, thank you. Irna, you want to say something?
Thank you. I just briefly wanted to add that, of course, we have the law in the books, we could say, in the law in practice. So regarding the quota system or the expectation of the 80% like or the majority of laborers being local, yeah, the question is if that really can be regulated, right? So that's just what I wanted to add. And also following Frank's description or explanation about the statement about the diverse actors, Chinese actors in Central Asia. And yeah, that's a very, very important point that, well, China is not a monolith, right? So we see a highly diverse range of actors nowadays active on the ground, we could say. So Chinese state-owned enterprises, privates or a mix of those and individuals. And I think it's also interesting to note that, well, for instance, some people who come, who enter Central Asia, like Pakistan, as a laborer working for a state-owned enterprise, they may stay and actually become engaged in another sector of the economy. And then, well, as they continue individually or continue with local actors. So that's a very interesting development, and it also has an impact on the way in which people understand or perceive China or Chinese individuals.
Okay, thank you. Let's talk about a little bit about Chinese wares in Central Asia goods. This was one of the things in the CAB survey. You know, I mean, this is natural, right? I mean, you go back throughout history, and one of the first things that happens when there's contact between two governments is the businessmen come in right behind them and try to see if they can start selling their goods there. What kind of difference does that make? What do people think when they're buying products, what products that China makes that are available in Central Asia are attractive to Central Asians? Kasiat?
Thank you, Bruce. We also had a question about Chinese technology being used in the country. And I think most of this Chinese technology is China. It's also sourced from China. It's not only Chinese design. So I think this question qualifies to answer you. Here, I think, and I'm sure Frank would be better able than me to comment on this because he is one of the authors of the report. They conducted regression analysis, and I'm sure he will be able to comment more. But in general, what we observed always is more positive attitude, favorable views of Chinese technology. And in general, technology in the region is viewed as something good. It doesn't have negative connotations. Right now, any technology seems like something good. That's why I think there is no negative attitude to without any relation to the source of this technology. We also had questions about using CCTV cameras, and I think Jasmine Darnola, she has written, she has a published article on this, and according to that, we also helped her to do the survey, and people were extremely positive about using the CCTV cameras, and they didn't see any negative connotations, any negative consequences of them, all these face recognition cameras, because they firstly thought about the security. They believed it enhanced the street security. That's why they were more positive about it. And I think it's also the case for the Chinese technology. People they're not much aware about the negative sides, and they're more focused on the positive sides of any technology coming to the region, which seems like people are hungry for technology. I think that, yeah, Frank would be able to comment more.
Frank?
Yes. Thank you very much, Kasiat. That was a great overview of what we found in the report. I think what I would add is that the two questions that Kasiat mentioned, so the one on Chinese goods and the one on Chinese technology, represent two faces of Central Asian approach to Chinese goods. So now the question on whether people were concerned about the quality of Chinese goods was asked only in three waves. So we don't really have that much to work with. But in all three waves, people said that they were concerned about the quality of Chinese goods. But if we think about this question, probably, and I agree with Kasiat on this, people are not really referring to technology that much, but they're probably referring to kind of more everyday type of goods. So thinking of the stuff that you could find in a bazaar. So like for everyone, and I guess this is true for everyone in this podcast that has spent some time in Central Asian bazaars, a large quantity of the goods that can be bought there, particularly like in the lower end of prices, come from China, and a huge chunk of the research on China Central Asia trade has beyond energy, of course, has focused on this very kind of micro movement of goods through the borders, also through land borders, and then basically people selling those goods in bazaars. So I guess when we see negative attitudes, I guess they would probably be referred to that kind of goods. But if we look at technology, and Jasmine Dallagnola has worked on that in depth, and I really invite people to read about it, but there's quite a bit of literature on the matter. We think first and foremost about smartphones. So, a lot of smartphones in Central Asia, like in Europe, really, are Chinese these days, including many companies, Oppo, Xiaomi, Huawei. And that is, I think, one important aspect of the presence of Chinese goods in Central Asia. And like all over the world, Chinese technological kind of products have made these smartphones and other kind of high-tech tools accessible to a larger amount of people because of the lower prices. So, it's not surprising that people are welcoming Chinese technology. Now, what is an interesting kind of more recent turn is that it is when we speak about Chinese goods, we do not only speak about trade anymore, but we also speak about manufacturing. So I was mentioning before the development of electric vehicles in Uzbekistan. Now, this is a really relevant and very kind of famous and flashy development, but this is the sector of cars and electric vehicles is a very important one in terms of the perception of Chinese technology in Uzbekistan. And this is because in the last couple of years, trade of electric vehicles from China was liberalized, and we've seen a boom in imports of cars from China. If you look at the data, it's really striking how much that sector has driven the increase of imports from China. And now we're seeing how this production is being slowly localized, or at least they are assembling those cars in Uzbekistan, not yet actually producing them. But this will be, I guess, another influential aspect in terms of thinking about Chinese goods in the region. And I've been in Tashkent and Jizakh for more than a week last month, and the quantity of Chinese cars on the streets is actually very surprising in a country that, as everyone that has been might know, usually only has one brand of cars from white Chevrolets, famously. So this is really something to keep in mind, I believe.
Okay, thank you. Irina, I'd like to hear your thoughts on Chinese goods in Tajikistan. But also, I read your paper, and the Chinese are also big in agricultural goods in Tajikistan. Is that true?
Yes, thank you. Yes, actually, that's also what I would like to add or to tell something about. Basically, you have the thing. What Frank and Tassi mentioned is that the influx basically of commodity goods that has taken place. So for many years already, right? And I think initially there was a lot of criticism, but at the same time we have to remember that actually the goods. The fourth, right? Other goods imported are still most often very, very expensive. But a more recent development, and I think that Frank also touched on that, is that, you see basically the production of capital goods in China. And, for us Chinese businessmen, for Chinese companies, Central Asia is a captive market, right? You see increasingly spread of, agricultural seeds, I could say, but also, for instance, agricultural technology. That's a very interesting and very recent development. As for agriculture, we see a growing role of Chinese companies in terms of seeds and technology. And while there's internationally quite a lot of fear about China's rise in agriculture, for instance, regarding GMOs or the spread of unregulated seeds, but also pesticides, what I have observed in my research is that Tajik farmers their choices are not really influenced by these global politics, we could say. And for them, well, basically, it's they make their decisions based on their their context, their socioeconomic context, or what suits in their robotic pharmacies. Global politics don't really do it. They don't really influence their choices when they select their agricultural technology or their seeds. And I think that's very important to address.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you. Okay. We are coming close to the end, so I'm going to ask everyone for their final comments. But I'd also be curious to hear anything you have to say about, as the survey, the Central Asian Barometer survey mentioned, it compared like Russian, U.S., Chinese. Where are the Chinese in terms of influence in Central Asia, at least as the people see it? There's a lot of different countries that want to do various things with Central Asia. They want their own influence. They want to do trade with them. They offer cultural contacts, things like that. How do the Chinese stack up against the competition, for lack of a better way to put it? Frank, I'm going to start with you.
Yes, thank you. Well, the competition. So I guess, I will conclude on this because I think it's very interesting. So of course, in the report, we had a comparison with the most traditional, other actors that usually people discuss in comparison with China. So the Russian Federation and the United States. I think starting with the first, what we've seen is that in general, so over the years, perceptions towards Russia have been more positive in Central Asia. Now, this is not a surprise because the Central Asian citizens have a lot of ties with Russia. I think 1 in 3 citizens in Uzbekistan, but it's probably something similar in Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan as well. So 1 in 3 people have a relative that works or has worked in the Russian Federation. I think almost half of the population reads Russian media, and this maybe Kasiyet Web can confirm this this data because we didn't really specifically use it in this report. But there is a lot of contact with Russia, and this creates a lot of attention towards what is happening in Russia, and a lot of purchase of Russian narratives in Central Asia, also through the migrant community. Of course, this is a double-edged sword. Since this spring and, the attack that happened in Moscow perpetrated by Central Asian migrants, of course, there has been a lot of anti-Central Asian and xenophobic sentiment in Russia with related anti-migrant legislation and regulations in many regions and all over the Federation, and this as well might have had an influence. And now I say this because if we look at the data, it's another kind of point that we noticed is that public opinion on Russia is declining in at least Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Uzbekistan. However, and it would be easy to connect it just to the war in Ukraine, but actually, there are a lot of issues related to economic relations, particularly for migration between Russia and Central Asia. And I feel going back to what Irna was saying in terms of what the Chinese economy is offering to Central Asians, this is really something that we should keep in mind when we compare Russia and China. So the Chinese economy is, witnessing some structural change. And part of the structural change is the change in employment relations and the type of labor that Chinese people are interested or eager to engage in the country and outside. And this opens up a lot of opportunities for offshoring of Chinese companies abroad. And, what I was speaking about before is part of this. So I guess the balance between migration and new employment opportunities, and therefore between, migration to Russia and new employment opportunities offered also by the thousands of Chinese companies that are operating in Central Asia are, a good thing to keep in mind. This is not to say, though, that Russia is disappearing from Central Asia. Thousands of Russian companies also opened in the region. But I guess more work should be done to explore what exactly these companies are doing in the regions. And as for the US, and maybe I will leave to others the floor, because I'm speaking as always a bit too much. As for the US, I guess what we witnessed was declining public opinion on the US in Uzbekistan, and quite like not that much change in a decline in Uzbekistan and in Turkmenistan, while not that much change in other countries where opinions have been balanced, as Kaziev usually says. Usually we expect positive opinions. However, like generalizing over the West, it is important to keep in mind that more and more Western companies, but also Western countries, are offering opportunities and kind of economic connections to Central Asia, also as part of, for example, of Uzbekistan's liberalization policies and prospects to join the World Trade Organization, as well as new migration opportunities to tackle the issues arising from the post-Crocus Hall attack, as well as the war in Ukraine. So there is also some movement from Europe and generally the West.
Okay, thank you. Kasiat?
Yes, thanks, Frank. I think Frank covered a lot of things, but what I can add is that our aim with the report was also the understanding that in the region, we have very little number of country experts on China, speaking Chinese and knowing a lot about their own country's relations with China. And we tried to create this report as a resource for them, or as an inspiration for them to do more research. And with the report in general, our goal was to focus on Central Asia and the implications of this, of their opinions on Central Asia. So, for example, the report doesn't include any recommendations for the world major powers, and we wanted to be as far as from the competition topic as possible, and we wanted to make this about Central Asians. But and the survey data also showed that there is so much differences. There are so many nuances in public opinion, and there are so many country-specific differences and regional differences and demographic differences also regarding this question about different countries. And this also, again, proves the fact that we really urgently need to support sinologists of the region, and including other researchers as well. And from the report, we have a small part which covers this topic. And we also see that the opinions to different countries, they are not really connected to each other, even though Central Asians consume a lot of Russian media, as Frank noted. But CAP has also released another report together with other researchers and paper lab from Kazakhstan. It is called Echo of War. It was also translated to English recently. And in that report, we specifically focus on the Central Asian public opinion towards Russia and the war and different implications for Central Asians. For example, we analyze the media consumption and how media consumption has something to do with the opinion on the war. And also the report features qualitative data that was gathered in the three countries of Central Asia regarding the war. And I think it would be great to talk about it and also to read it for anyone that's interested in it. And I also want to support Frank in saying that in Kazakhstan, we see this very interesting trend of Russia becoming less and less favorable since 2022.
Okay, thank you. Irina, I'm saving you for last because, you know, we're talking about Chinese influence and we're comparing it a little bit with the other countries' influence in the region. Now, surely no country has had more reason to view Russia with a lot of skepticism than Tajikistan lately, given that the Crocus City Hall attackers, the alleged suspects were all Tajik. And really, Russia is taking it out on the Tajik migrant laborers in Russia right now. And as Frank said, like probably one of every three people in Tajikistan has a relative that's working in Russia at the moment, and they're really being discriminated against at the moment. So have you noticed that that's changed the view of China also for Tajiks, that the Chinese are somehow more friendlier than the Russians have been lately?
Well, I'm not sure if it can be, I mean, if it's directly related, but I had a very interesting conversation recently regarding the basically foreign presence in Tajikistan's cotton sector, where we see that, well, China is involved, the EU is going to be involved, so they're actually exporting their models of development, we could say, and the Russians recently started as well. So I asked one of my acquaintances in Tajikistan how the Russians, how their business went, and he replied, well, you know, the yields were very low because, you know, the Tajiks are treated badly in Russia, so no one wants to work for them. So that was a quite interesting statement, actually, that reflects that. But overall, in recent years, so the last time I was in Tajikistan was in 2023. Already more than a year ago. But I was surprised to learn that people were still leaving to Russia and still purchasing houses. So I really, all the time, record really like, yeah, positive and negative perceptions, they really coexist, and that regards China, but it also regards Russia. So it is quite complex to understand that diversity overall. But briefly, also to respond to Frank's statement, I think it's very interesting that we see Central Asia really re-emerging or emerging as a frontier of investment, basically, or extraction. And then you see, well, the Americans also trying to walk into agreements in Uzbekistan. We see, well, of course, mines in Kyrgyzstan and in Pakistan. So overall, I think that's a very interesting dynamic to continue following, basically. And my interest then is in particular how that unfolds or materializes on the ground.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Obviously, we could do this conversation for a couple days, actually. But I do thank you for being on the program today to share some of your insight with our audience. So thank you, Irina, Kasiyat, and Frank for being on the program. And a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Medjlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Medjlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back again soon. Bye-bye.